The night was full of heavy scents. The darkness in the surrounding grove was almost impenetrable. The oak trees were still. Then the sounds of the forest seemed to die away, and Coram heard only the breathing of his companions. For a long moment, Gofanon neither moved nor spoke. His huge chest rose and fell rapidly, and his eyes had closed. Then he moved slowly, lifting the sword to 8 separate points before returning to his original position. Then he began to sing. He sang in the beautiful liquid speech of the Shi, which was so like the Varach tongue, and which Coram could easily understand.
Lo, I made the sharp swords of 100 brave Shi knights. 99 in battle were broken, only one came home. Some did rot in earth and ice, some broke in trees, some sank in sea, some melted in fire, were eaten by beasts, only one came home. One blade was left of the Shi metal, all broken, all torn, not enough for a sword. The skill of the swordsmith was all that was needed. Iron would make it whole. The strength of the Shi and the strength of the Mabden united now in Gofanon's blade. His gift for Coram to help keep him strong, the weakness to it holds.
Now Gofanon shifted his grip slightly upon the sword, raising it a little higher. He swayed as one in a trance before continuing.
Forged in fire, tempered in frost, power from the sun, wisdom from the moon, fine and fallible, this brand is fated. They will hate and tremble in terror, the ghosts of the yet to come. Even now the sword thirsts for them, their blood grows chill.
And it seemed almost that Gofanon balanced the blade by its tip, and that it stood upright under its own volition. And Coram recalled a dream, and he recoiled.
When did I handle such a sword before?
Soon will come the naming, then the foe shall shudder. This handsome needle shall sew the Foimiore shroud. Glaive Gofanon made thee, now you go to Coram. Worms and carrion eaters, they will call you friend. Harsh shall be the slaughter, ere the winter's vanquished. Good red reaping, for a Shi scythe. Then must come the naming, then must come the tally. Shi and Vata both shall pay the score.
Now a frightful shuddering possessed Gofanon's bulky body, and he came close to losing his grip on the sword.
Why do the others not seem to hear Gofanon's groans?
He looked at their faces. They stood entranced, uncomprehending, overawed. Gofanon hesitated, rallied himself, and went on.
A name blade I call the Coram sword. Hissak and Gofanon claim thee not. Black winds cry through limbo. Blind rivers await my soul.
Gofanon appeared terrified by what he saw through his closed eyes.
Have I ever seen this sword? No, but there was another like it. This sword will prove useful against the Foimiore, I know. But is the sword really a friend? Why do I consider it an enemy?
This was a fated forging, but now that it is done, the blade like its destiny cannot be broken.
Coram could see only the sword. He found that he was moving towards it, climbing the mound. It was as if Gofanon had disappeared and the blade hung in the air, burning sometimes white like the moon, sometimes red like the sun. Coram reached out for the handle with his silver fingers, but the sword seemed to retreat. Only when Coram stretched his right hand, his hand of flesh, towards it, did it allow him to approach. Was Gofanon's song accompanied in the far distance by the strains of a harp? Suddenly, the sword was in Coram's right hand.
It fits my grasp perfectly. Its balance is superb.
He turned it this way and that in the light of the moon, wondering at its sharpness and its handling.
It is my sword. I feel that I am united with something I lost long since and then forgot about. It is my sword.
Serve well the knight who knoweth thee.
The great dwarf's eyes opened. His expression was a mixture of tormented guilt, sympathy for Coram, and triumph. Then Gofanon turned to peer at the moon. Coram followed his gaze and was transfixed by the great silver disc, which apparently filled the whole sky. Coram felt as though he were being drawn into the moon. He saw faces there, scenes of fighting armies, wastelands, ruined cities and fields. He saw himself, though the face was not his. He saw a sword not unlike the one he now held, but the other sword was black, whereas his was white.
Coram.
He saw Jari O'Connell.
Coram.
He saw Maeve.
Coram.
He saw Ralina.
Coram.
And he saw other women, and he loved them all. But of Maeve alone, he felt fear. Then the Dagdach harp appeared, and changed into the form of a youth, whose body shone with a strange golden color, and who in some way was also the harp. Then he saw a great pale horse, and he knew that that horse was his, but he was wary of where the horse would take him. Then Coram saw a plain all white with snow, and across this plain came a single rider, whose robe was scarlet, and whose arms and armor were those of the Vardach, and who had one hand of flesh and one of metal, and whose right eye was covered by an elaborately embroidered patch, and whose features were the features of a Vardach, of Coram. And Coram knew that this rider was not himself. And he tried not to look as the rider came closer and closer, an expression of mocking hatred upon his face, and in his single eye the unequivocal determination to kill Coram and take his place.
No!
Clouds moved across the moon, and the light dimmed, and Coram stood upon Krem's mound in the oak grove, the place of power, with a sword in his hand that was unlike any sword forged before this day. And Coram looked down the mound and saw that Gofanon now stood with Hissach Sunthief, and Jari O'Connell, and Maeve the red-haired, Maeve of the long arm, and all four stared at Coram as if they wished to help him and could not. Coram did not know why he replied to their expressions in the way he did when he raised the sword high over his head.
I am Coram. This is my sword. I am alone.
Coram slept long into the following morning, but it was not a dreamless sleep.
There are untrustworthy heroes and noble traitors.
He had visions of swords, both the one he had been given during the ceremony in the oak grove, and others, in particular one other. A black blade which seemed, like the Dagdach harp, to have a complex personality, as if inhabited by the spirit of a particularly powerful demon.
You are the champion. You are the champion.
You must follow the champion's way.
And what if that way is not the way of the Mabdon whom I have sworn to help?
You must follow the champion's way.
I have no liking for this dream.
What dream is that, my love?
Maeve, dressed, fresh-faced and determined, had been standing beside the bed.
Nothing. Last night's events disturbed me, I suppose.
Coram looked into her eyes, and he felt a little fear creep into his mind. He reached out and took hold of her soft hands, her strong, cool hands.
Do you really love me, Maeve?
I do.
He looked beyond her to the carved chest, on the lid of which rested the sword Gofanon had given him.
How shall I name the sword?
You will know. Is it not what Gofanon told you? You will know what to call it when the time comes, and then the sword will be informed with all its powers. Prince Coram's bath, is it ready?
It is ready, my lady.
Come, Coram, refresh yourself. Wash away your unpleasant dreams. In 2 days we shall be ready to march. There is little left for you to do until then. Let us spend those 2 days as enjoyably as we can. Let us ride this morning beyond the woods and over the moors.
I am a fool to brood. If my destiny is set, then it is set.
An hour later, Amergin met Coram and Maeve as they prepared to mount their horses. The High King was tall, slender, and youthful, but had the dignity of a man much older than he looked. He wore the blue and gold robes of the Archdruid, and there was a simple coronet of iron and raw gems set upon his head of long, fair hair.
Greetings, Prince Coram. Did your business go well last night?
I think so. Gofanon seems satisfied.
But you do not carry the sword he gave you.
It is not a sword, I think, to be worn casually. Today I keep my old, good sword at my side. I shall carry Gofanon's gift into battle, however.
Ah.
Amergin nodded. He looked down at the cobbles of the courtyard, apparently in deep thought.
Gofanon told you no more of those allies Ilbrek mentioned?
I took it that Gofanon did not regard them, whoever they are, as allies, necessarily.
Just so. However, it would seem to me it would be worth risking much if it meant that our chances of defeating the Foy Miore were improved.
I am surprised by what I guess to be the import of your words, High King. You do not think we shall be successful?
The attack on Caer Lud will cost us dear. I meditated on your plan last night. I believe I had a vision.
Of defeat?
It was not a vision of victory. You know Caer Lud, Coram, as do I. You know how utterly cold it is now that the Foy Miore inhabit it. Cold of that order affects men often in ways they do not fully comprehend.
That is true.
That is all that I thought, a simple thought. I cannot be more specific.
You do not need to be, High King. But I fear there is no better means of making war against our enemies. If there were...
We should all know it.
Amergin shrugged and patted the neck of Coram's horse.
But if you have the opportunity to reason with Gofanon again, beg him at the very least to tell us the nature of these allies.
I promise you that I shall, Archdruid, but I do not anticipate any success.
Amergin's hand fell away from the horse.
No, neither do I.
Coram and Maeve rode out from Caer Malad, leaving behind them a thoughtful Archdruid, and soon they were galloping through the oak woods and up into the high moorlands, where curlews rose and sank above their heads, and the smell of the bracken and the heather was sweet in their nostrils. The sun was warm in a soft blue sky.
It seems that no power in the universe could change the simple beauties of the landscape right now.
It is a kindly day.
And soon their spirits had risen higher than ever before, and they wandered through the knee-high bracken, and then sank down into it, so that all they could see was the sky and the cool, restful green of the ferns on all sides. And they held each other, and they made gentle love, then lay close together in silence, breathing the good air and listening to the quiet of the moorlands. They were allowed an hour of this peace before Coram detected a faint pulsing from the ground beneath him and put his ear to the source, knowing what it must mean.
Horses, coming near.
What? Fuy Miore riders?
Maeve sat up, reaching for her sling and her pouch, which she carried everywhere.
Perhaps. Gaynor or the people of the Pines, or both. Yet we have outriders everywhere at present to warn us of an attack from the east, and we know that all the Fuy Miore gather in the east at present.
Cautiously, Coram began to raise his head.
The horsemen are coming from the northwest, more or less from the direction of the coast.
His view was blocked by the rise of a hill.
Our horses will be clearly visible to anyone approaching over that hill.
They crept towards the horses and hastily clambered into their saddles, riding towards the hill, but at an angle to the approaching horsemen.
With luck, we will not immediately be seen if they crest the hill.
An outcrop of white limestone offered them some cover, and they drew rein behind this, waiting until the riders came in sight. Almost immediately, the first three appeared. The ponies they rode were small and shaggy, and dwarfed by the size of the broad-shouldered men on their backs. These men all had the same blazing, pale red hair and sharp blue eyes. The hair of their beards was plaited into a dozen narrow braids, and the hair of their heads hung in four or five very thick braids, into which were bound strands of beads, glinting. They had long oval shields strapped to their left arms, and these shields appeared to be of hide and wicker, reinforced with rims and bands of brass hammered into bold flowing designs. The shields appeared to have sheaths attached to their inner surfaces, and into these were stuck two iron-headed spears shod with brass. On their hips, the men sported short, wide-bladed swords in leather, iron-studded sheaths. Some wore their helmets, and others carried them over their saddle pommels, and the helmets were all roughly of the same design, conical caps of leather, ribbed by iron or brass, and decorated with the long, curving horns of the mountain ox. In some cases, the original horn had been completely obscured by the polished pebbles, bits of iron or brass, and even gold set into it. Thick plaid cloaks, predominantly of red, blue, or green, were flung over their shoulders. They had kilts, either of plaid or of leather, and their legs were naked. Only a few wore any kind of footgear, and of these, most wore a simple sandal strapped at the ankle.
They are, without a doubt, warriors, but I have seen none quite like these. Though to a degree they resemble the folk of Tirnam Bale, and the ponies remind me of those ridden by my old enemies of the forest near Moidel's Mount.
Eventually all the riders came into sight, about a score of them. Some had broken limbs, others had wounds bound up, and two of the men were strapped tightly to their saddles so that they would not fall from their ponies.
It is evident they have lately experienced hardship.
I do not think they mean harm to Caer Malot. These are Mabden. But what Mabden? I thought all warriors had been summoned by now.
They have travelled far and hard by the look of them. And over the sea, too. Look, their cloaks bear the stains of seawater. Perhaps they have left a boat near here. Come, let us hail them.
I bid you good afternoon, strangers. Where are you bound?
The burly warrior in the vanguard brought his red brows together in a suspicious scowl, his heavy, gnarled hand reaching towards the handle of his sword.
I bid you a good afternoon also, if you mean us no harm. As for where we are bound, well, that is our business.
It is also the business of those whose land this is.
That could be, but if it be not Mabden land, then you have conquered it. And if you have conquered it, then you are our enemy, and we must slay you. We can see that you are not Mabden.
True, but I serve the Mabden cause, and this lady, she is Mabden.
She resembles a Mabden, certainly. But we have seen too many illusions on our journey here to be deceived by what is apparently so.
I am Maeve. I am Maeve of the Longarm, famous in my own right as a warrior. And I am the daughter of King Manach, who rules this land from Caer Malot.
The warrior became a trifle less suspicious, but he kept his hand upon the hilt of his sword, and the others spread out as if they prepared to attack Maeve and Corum.
And I am Corum, once called the Prince in the Scarlet Robe, but I traded that robe to a wizard, and now I am called Corum of the Silver Hand.
He held up his metal hand, which up to that point he had concealed.
Have you not heard of me? I fight for the Mabden against the Foy Miori.
One of the younger warriors behind the leader pointed at Corum.
That is he, Artek. The Scarlet Robe. He does not wear it now, but the features are the same. The eye patch is the same. That is he.
You have followed us then, Sir Demon.
The leading warrior turned in his saddle and looked back at his men.
These are all that are left, but perhaps we can defeat you and your she-demon consort.
He's no demon, and neither am I. Why'd you accuse us of this? Where have you seen us before?
Shh!
The warrior steadied his nervous pony, and his metal stirrup struck the rim of his long shield. He nodded at Corum.
We have not seen you before. We have seen only this one. In those foul and sorcerous islands back there.
He jerked his head in the direction of the sea.
The island where we beached 8 good longships and 10 rafts of provisions and livestock going ashore for fresh water and meat. You will recall that when we left, it was with but a single ship. No women or children, no livestock save our ponies, and few provisions.
The warrior stared with hatred at Corum.
I assure you that you have not seen me until this moment. I am Corum. I fight the Foy Miori. These last weeks I have spent at Caer Malot. I have not left at any time. This is the first journey I have taken beyond the immediate confines of the city in a month.
You are the one who came against us on the island. In your red cloak, with your helm of mock silver, with your eye patch and your laughter.
A Shafanho, we know you.
It has literally been a lifetime since I heard that word used. You are close to angering me, stranger. I speak the truth. You must have come to blows with an enemy who resembled me in some way.
Aye, to the extent of being your twin. We feared you would follow us, but we are ready to defend ourselves against you. Where do your men hide?
The youth looked about him, his braids swinging with the movement of his head.
I have no men!
Then you are foolish.
I will not fight you. Why are you here?
To join those who gather at Kyr Malad.
It is as I thought.
All Coram's earlier forebodings had returned, and he fought to hold them off.
If we give you our weapons and take you to Kyr Malad, will you believe that we mean you no harm? At Kyr Malad, you will learn that we speak the truth, that we have never seen you before, and that we are not your enemies.
It could be a trick, Artek, to lure us into a trap.
Ride with your swords at our throats if you like. If you are attacked, you may kill us.
You have none of the manner of that other we met on the island. And if you lead us to Kyr Malad, at least we shall have reached our destination and thus gained something from this meeting.
Artek, be wary.
Silence, Cowan. We can always slay the Shafanho later.
I would ask you, in courtesy, not to employ that term when you refer to me. It is not one I like, and it does not make me sympathetic to you.
Well...
Artek made to answer, a hard smile half forming on his lips. Then he looked into Coram's single eye and thought better of his reply.
Cowan, Lorik, go to them. Take their weapons. Hold your swords at them as we ride. Very well, Coram. Lead us to Kyr Malad.
Coram derived some pleasure from the looks of shock on the strangers' faces as they rode to the outskirts of the camp and saw the expressions of concern and anger in the eyes of every Mabdon who became aware that Coram and Maeve were prisoners. Now it was Coram's turn to smile, and his smile was broad as the crowd around the 20 riders became thicker and thicker until they were no longer able to advance and came to a halt in the middle of the camp, still some distance from the hill on which Kyr Malad was built. Morkian of the Two Smiles arrived and glared at Artek, whose sword pressed upon Coram's chest.
What mean you by this, man? Why do you hold hostage our princess? Why threaten the life of our friend, Prince Coram?
Artek's embarrassment was so complete that he blushed a deeper red than his hair and beard, but he did not lower his sword.
So you spoke the truth. Unless this is some monstrous illusion and all these are your demon followers.
If they are demons, Sir Artek, then you are doomed anyway, are you not?
You are right. I must believe you. Yet your resemblance to the one who attacked us on that hateful and haunted isle is so close. You would not blame me, Prince Coram, if you saw him.
I think that I have seen him in a dream. Later, Sir Artek, you and I must talk about this, for I believe the evil which was worked against you will soon be directed against me, and the results will be even more tragic.
Artek darted him a puzzled glance, but, respecting the tone of Coram's words, said nothing further.
You must rest, and you must eat. I have taken a liking to you, in spite of the poor circumstances of our meeting. Then you must tell us your tale in the great hall of Kyr Malad.
You are generous, Prince Coram, and you are courteous. Now I see why the Mabdon respect you.
That evening, in the great hall, many gathered to hear Artek's story.
We are an island folk, living mainly off the sea. We fish, well, in the past, until recently, we were sea raiders, in short. It is a hard life on our islands. Little grows there. Sometimes we raided nearby coasts, and other times we attacked ships and took what we needed to survive.
I know you now. You are pirates, are you not? You are Artek of Klonghar. Why, the folk of our seaports pass water at the very mention of your name.
Artek made a feeble gesture, and again he blushed.
I am that same Artek, I admit, King Fiacha.
King Monarch leaned across the table and patted the pirate upon the hand.
Fear not, Artek of Klonghar. All old scores are forgotten in Kyr Malad. Here we have only one enemy, the Foimiori. Tell us how you came here.
One of the ships we raided was from Gwydyne Garan here. On its way to Tir na n'Beya, we discovered, with a message for the king of that land. From that ship, we learned of the great massing against the Foy Maori. While we have never encountered this folk, living in the remote northwest as we do, we felt that if all the Mabdin were joining together against the cold folk, then we should help also. That their fight was our fight in this case. Besides, without your ships, how should we live? So it was in our interest to ensure that you survived. We readied all our own boats, more than a score, and built strong, watertight rafts to tow behind them, taking all our folk from Fion, our whole island's name, since we did not wish to leave our women and children unprotected. Ah, how I wish we had left them. Then at least they might have died in their own homes, and not on the shifting shores of that terrible island.
Where is this island?
A little to the north and west of Clongar. The storm drove us in that direction. During the same storm, we lost most of our water and much of our meat. Do you know the place, Sir Shi?
Has it a single high hill, very even in its proportions at its center?
Artek inclined his head.
It has.
And does one huge pine tree grow on the peak of that hill at the exact center?
There is the biggest pine I've ever seen there.
When you have landed, does everything seem to shimmer and threaten to change its appearance, save for that hill which remains sharp and solid in outline?
You've been there?
No, I've only heard of the place.
And Ilbrek darted a very hard stare at Gafanon, who affected to be without interest in this island and looked studiously bored. But Coram knew the dwarf well enough to see that Gafanon was deliberately ignoring the import of Ilbrek's glance.
We sea warriors have passed the island before, of course, but since it is often surrounded by mist and there are hidden rocks at various points off its coast, we have never actually landed there. We've never had the necessity to do so.
Though some have been thought shipwrecked there in the past and never found. There are superstitions about the place, that it is inhabited by Shafanho and such.
Is it sometimes called Eunice Scythe, this place?
I have heard it called that, aye. It is an old, old name for the place.
So you have been to Shadow Island? Fate draws at more threads than we guessed, eh, Gafanon?
But Gafanon pretended that he had not heard Ilbrek, though later Coram saw him offer his fellow Shi a secret warning glare.
Aye, that is where we saw Prince Coram here. Or his double. I apologize, Prince Coram. I had not
meant... Perhaps it was my shadow you saw. After all, the place is called Eunice Scythe, the Isle of Shadows. An evil shadow, however.
I have heard of Eunice Scythe.
Until this moment, Amergin had said nothing beyond a formal greeting to Artek and his men.
A place of dark sorcery, where evil druids would go to work their magic. A place shunned even by the Shi.
Now it was Amergin's turn to look meaningfully at both Ilbrek and Gafanon. And Coram guessed that the wise archdruid had also noticed the exchange of glances between the two Shi.
Eunice Scythe, so I was taught as a novice, existed even before the coming of the Shi. It shares certain properties with the Shi Isle of High Braesale, but is in other ways unlike that place, where High Braesale was supposed to be a land of fair enchantments. Eunice Scythe was said to be an island of black madness.
Aye. It is, to say the least, inhospitable to Shi and Mabdin alike.
You have been there, Gafanon.
Once.
Black madness and red despair. When we landed there, we found ourselves unable to return to our ships. Disgusting forests grew up in our path. Mists engulfed us. Demons attacked us. All kinds of misshapen beasts lurked in wait for us. They destroyed all our children. They slew all our women, and most of our menfolk. We are the only ones of the whole race of Fion who survived. And that by luck, stumbling accidentally upon one of our ships and sailing directly for your shores. Even if I knew my wife was still alive and trapped upon Eunice Scythe, I would not return.
Artek clenched his two hands together.
I could not.
She is dead. I saw it happen.
How could we be sure that what we saw was in any way reality?
No. She is dead, Artek.
Aye.
Artek's hands parted. His shoulders slumped.
She is dead.
Now you know why I would have no part of your idea, Ilbrek.
Korum looked away from the still shaking Artek of Klongar, he looked at the two Shi.
Is that where you thought we should find allies, Ilbrek?
Ilbrek motioned with his hand, dismissing his own idea.
It was. Nothing but evil comes from Eunice Scythe. Only evil, no matter how disguised.
I had not realized.
Amergin reached out and touched Artek upon the shoulder.
Artek, I will give you a potion that will make you sleep and will ensure that you will not dream. In the morning, you will be a man again.
Come, Ilbrek. We have much to discuss.
Aye.
Poor Artek. What allies had you hoped to find on Eunice Scythe, Ilbrek?
Oh, I thought the inhabitants, certain of them at least, might be bribed to side with us. I suppose that my judgment was poor, as Gafanon said.
The sun was setting over the camp. Ilbrek and Korum walked toward the Shi's blue tent. From a score of cooking fires came the mingled smells of a variety of meals.
Artek and his followers thought they saw me there. They thought I was one of those who slew their companions.
That puzzles me. I have heard of nothing like that before. Perhaps you do have a twin. Did you ever have a brother?
A brother?
Korum was reminded of the old woman's prophecy.
No, but I was warned to fear one. I thought the warning might apply to Gaynor, who, spiritually in some ways, is a brother. Or whoever is lying under the hill in the oak grove. But now I think that brother awaits me in Eunice Scythe, Ilbrek.
Awaits you? You do not mean to visit the Isle of Shadows?
It occurs to me that those powerful enough to destroy the best part of the people of Fion, fearsome enough to terrify one as brave as Artek, would be good allies to have. Besides, I would face this brother and discover who he is and why I should fear him.
It is unlikely that you would survive the dangers of Eunice Scythe.
Ilbrek seated himself in his giant chair.
I am in a mood to take most risks with my own destiny, so long as it is not to the disadvantage of these Mabden we serve.
Ilbrek's sea-blue eyes met Korum's single eye.
I too. But the Mabden march to Caer Lud the day after tomorrow, and you must lead them in their war.
That is what stops me from sailing immediately to Eunice Scythe. That is all.
You fear not for your own life? Your sanity? Perhaps your soul?
I am called Champion Eternal. What is death or madness to me? Who shall live many more lives than this? How can my soul be trapped if it is needed elsewhere? If anyone has the chance of visiting Eunice Scythe and returning, then surely it is Korum of the Silver Hand.
Ilbrek looked broodingly into the middle distance.
Your logic has flaws, but you are right in one point. You are the best fitted to seek Eunice Scythe.
And there I could attempt to employ its inhabitants in our service.
They would be of great use to us, I admit.
Good evening, my friends.
Gofanon stood there, his axe upon his shoulder.
Good evening.
He sat himself down on Ilbrek's war chest, placing his axe carefully beside him. He looked from Korum to Ilbrek and back again. He read something in both their faces that disturbed him.
Well, I hope you heard enough just now to dissuade you from the foolhardy scheme Ilbrek was considering earlier.
You plan to go there?
Ilbrek spread his hands.
I had thought...
I have been there. That was my bad luck. My good luck was that I managed to escape. Evil druids used that island before the Mabden grew to power on this plain. It existed as a place before the rising of the Varach and the Nadrach, though it was not then on this plain.
Then how came it here?
An accident. For some reason, there were those who grew powerful enough in its own plane to be able to destroy it. As fate would have it, this was at the time when we Shi were coming through to help the Mabden against the Foy Miore. The inhabitants of Eunice Scythe were able to break through to this plane under cover of our own movements, so indirectly, the Shi are responsible for that place of horror existing here. Thus, Eunice Scythe escaped the vengeance of the people of its own world, yet I heard that this world is inhospitable to them. They cannot leave their island without certain aids, or they inevitably die. They seek a means of returning to their own plane, or some other more hospitable to them. Thus far, they have been unsuccessful. That is why I thought we might bargain with them to come to our aid, if we offered to help them.
They would betray us, no matter what bargain they made with us, Ilbrek. It is as much in their nature to do so as it is in our nature to breathe air.
We should have to guard against such a happening.
We could not. Listen to me, Ilbrek. Once I had the notion to visit Eunice Scythe during the quiet times following the defeat of the Foy Miore. I knew what the Mabden said of High Braesale, my own home, that it was inhabited by demons. I thought, therefore, that probably Unaskythe was a similar place. That while Mabden perished there, she would survive. I was wrong. What High Braesale is to the Mabden, so Unaskythe is to the She. It belongs neither to this plane nor to ours. Moreover, the inhabitants use the properties of their land deliberately to torture and to slay all visitors not of their own kind.
Yet you escaped, and Artek and a few others survived.
By luck in both cases. Artek told you that they found their ship by purest chance. Similarly, I stumbled into the sea. Once clear of Unaskythe, I could not be followed by the inhabitants. I swam for more than a day before I reached an island little more than a crag of rock jutting from the sea. There I remained until sighted by a ship. They were wary of me, but they took me aboard, and eventually I made my way back to High Braesale, and never left thereafter.
You mentioned nothing of this when we first met.
For good reason. I would have mentioned nothing now, save that Artek spoke out.
Yet you speak only of general terrors, not of specific dangers.
That is because the specific dangers are indescribable. We fight the Foimiore without seeking such allies as the folk of Unaskythe. That way, some of us might survive. The other way, we are all doomed. I speak the truth.
As you see it, Gofanon.
At this, Gofanon's face hardened. He picked up his axe and flung it onto his shoulder. Ameagin came to Coram's chambers that night, while Maeve was elsewhere visiting her father. Coram had been staring through the window at the fires of the camp. Ameagin spread his thin hands.
I apologize for my rudeness, Prince Coram, but I wish to speak with you privately. I gather that you have angered Gofanon in some way.
There was a dispute.
Concerning Unaskythe.
Aye.
You had considered visiting the place?
I am due to lead your army on the day after tomorrow. Clearly it would be impossible for me to do both.
Coram indicated a carved chair.
Be seated, Archdruid.
Coram sat down upon his bed as Ameagin lowered himself into the chair without looking at Coram.
Yet you would go if you had no responsibilities here.
I think so. Ilbrick is for the venture.
Your chances of survival would seem to be exceptionally slender.
Coram rubbed at his eye patch.
Perhaps. But then, if we cared considerably about our survival, we would not be engaged in this war against the Foimiore.
Well, that is reasonable.
There are many reasons why I should lead the Mabden. Morale must be kept as high as possible when we march through the cold lands.
True. I've been debating all this in my mind, as no doubt have you. But you will remember that I asked you earlier to persuade Gofanon to reveal the nature of these potential allies?
You spoke of it this morning.
Exactly. Well, since then I have meditated on this whole matter further, and my conclusions are the same. We shall fare badly at Caer Lud. We shall be defeated by the Foimiore, unless we have magical assistance. We require supernatural aid, Prince Coram, beyond anything I can summon, beyond anything the She have at their disposal. And it appears that the only place when such help can be got is Unaskythe. I tell you all this knowing that you are discreet. Needless to say, our armies must set forth with every confidence of defeating the Foimiore. Their morale would be harmed if you did not lead them. Yet I think even with your leadership we should still be beaten. Thus, reluctantly, I conclude that our only hope lies in your being able to bargain with the folk of Unaskythe to come to our assistance.
And what if I fail?
Dying men will curse you for a traitor. But your name will not be dishonored for long, for there will be no Mabden left to hate you.
Is there no other way? What of the lost treasures of the Mabden, the She gifts?
Those that remain are in Foimiore hands. The healing cauldron is at Caer Lud. So is the Collar of Power. There was one other, but we were never sure of its nature, nor why it was amongst our treasures. That is lost.
What was it?
An old saddle of cracked leather. We kept it faithfully as we kept our other treasures, but I think it came with them by mistake.
So you cannot recover this cauldron and collar until the Foimiore are defeated?
Just so.
Do you know anything more of the folk of Unaskythe?
Only that they would, if they could, leave this plane of ours forever.
So I have learned. Yet we are not, surely, powerful enough to help them do this.
If I had the Collar of Power, I might, with other knowledge, be able to achieve their end for them.
Gofanon thinks that any bargain with the folk of the Shadow Isle will cost us dear. too, dear.
If some of us survive, the cost will not be too much. And I think some of us would live on.
Perhaps life is not at stake. What other damage could they do?
I do not know. If you think the risk is too great...
I have my own reasons, as well as yours, for visiting Eunice Scythe.
It would be best if you left without much ceremony. I would inform our men that you have embarked upon a quest and that you will, if possible, rejoin us before the attack on Caer Lud. In the meantime, if Kofanin will not go to Eunice Scythe, let us hope he will lead the Mabdon in your stead, for he knows Caer Lud.
But he has a weakness, remember that. The wizard Kaladin has power over him, which can only be broken if Kaladin loses the bag of spittle he holds. When you attack Caer Lud, and if I have perished, seek Kaladin out and slay him at once. I think of all those who side with the Formiori that Kaladin is the most dangerous, for he is the most human.
I will remember what you say. But I do not think you will perish upon Eunice Scythe, Corum.
Perhaps not. Yet I sense that this world becomes increasingly inhospitable to me, as it does to the folk of the Isle of Shadows.
You could speak truly. The specific conjunction of the planes might, in your case, be unlucky.
That sounds like mysticism of doubtful veracity, High King.
And truth often sounds so.
The Archdruid rose.
When would you set forth for Eunice Scythe?
Soon. I must consult Ilbrick.
Leave all other things to me, and I beg you, do not discuss our plan too fully with anyone, even Maeve.
Very well. I wonder if the Archdruid is playing an even more complex game than he guesses, and that I am a piece he is preparing to sacrifice. No, I cannot think like that. American's logic is good, particularly if his vision was accurate and the Mabdon army stands the chance of being totally defeated at Caer Lud.
Corum was arming himself when Maeve came in.
I expected to find you asleep, and instead I see you dressed for war. What's this? Do we march tomorrow?
No. I go to Eunice Scythe.
You embark upon a private quest when you're due to lead us against Caer Lud? I do wish to believe that you joke.
Corum remembered Amergan's wish that he should say as little as possible about his reasons for the journey.
It is not a private quest. Not wholly, at any rate.
No? We should never have trusted one not of our own race. Why should we expect you to feel loyalty to our cause?
You know that I feel that loyalty, Maeve.
Corum stretched out his arms towards her, but she shook his hand away, turning to glare at him.
You go to madness and death if you go to Eunice Scythe. You heard what Artek told us. If you go to Caer Lud with us, the worst that can happen to you is that your death will be a noble one.
I will rejoin you at Caer Lud, if that is possible. The army will travel much slower than shall I. There is every chance of my rejoining it even before the assault on Caer Lud.
There is every chance of you never returning from Eunice Scythe.
Aye.
You!
Maeve!
Corum then thought better of following Maeve.
Further argument will only lead to further misunderstanding.
He hoped that Amergan might explain his predicament to Maeve at some time, or at least convince her that his need to visit Eunice Scythe was not wholly the result of a private obsession. But it was with a heavy heart indeed that Corum left the castle and returned to the camp where Ilbrek awaited him. The golden giant was caparisoned for war, his great sword Retaliator sheathed at his hip, his huge horse Splendid Mane prepared for riding. He was smiling, plainly excited by the prospect of their adventure, but Corum could feel nothing but pain as he tried to return the she's smile.
There is no time to waste. As we agreed, we shall both ride Splendid Mane. He gallops faster than any mortal horse, and will have us to Eunice Scythe and back in no time. I got the chart from Cowan. There is naught else to keep us here.
No, not else.
You are irresponsible fools!
Corum wheeled round to confront a Gofanin whose face was dark with rage. The she-dwarf shook the fist which held his double-bladed war axe.
If you come back from Eunice Scythe alive, then you will not be sane. You will be good for nothing. We need you on this march. The Mabdon are expecting the three of us to lead them. Our presence gives them confidence. Do not go to Eunice Scythe. Do not go.
Gofanin, in most things I respect your wisdom. In this matter, however, we must follow our own instincts.
Your instincts are false if they lead you to destruction, to the betrayal of those you have sworn to serve. Do not go!
We go. We must.
Then an evil demon drives you, and you are no longer my friends. You are no longer my friends.
You should respect our motives, Gofanid.
Curse you! Even if you return sane from Eunice Scythe, and I doubt that you will bring your own doom with you. That is unquestionable. I have seen it. There has been a hint of it in my dreams of late.
The Vadak had a theory that dreams tell more about the man who dreams than about the world he dwells in. Could you have other motives for not wishing us to visit Eunice Scythe?
Gofanin glared at him contemptuously.
I go with the Mabdon to Kyr Lud.
Be careful of Kalatin.
I think that Kalatin was a better friend than are you two.
Gofanin's back was bowed as he made to leave the camp.
Well, must I decide?
Jaria Conal emerged from the shadows and stood with his hand on his hip, his other hand to his chin, staring at the three of them from under tightly drawn brows.
Must I decide between traveling to Eunice Scythe or Kyr Lud? Are my loyalties divided?
You go to Kyr Lud, Jari. Your wisdom and knowledge are acquired here. They are greater than mine.
Whose would not be?
Gofanin's back was still to Corum.
Go with Gofanin, Jari. Help guard him against Kalatin's sorcery.
Jari nodded. He touched Corum on the shoulder.
Goodbye, treacherous friend.
Corum?
Gofanin! I am sure that I do what is most necessary to serve our cause best.
You will pay a price. You will pay, Corum. Heed my warning.
Corum tapped a silver finger against the sword he now wore at his side.
My danger is lessened, however, thanks to your gift. I have faith in this blade you made. Do you say it will not protect me at all?
Gofanin shook his huge head from side to side as if in pain.
That depends upon the uses to which it is put. But by the souls of all the she-heroes great and dead, I wish that I had not forged it.
Splendid Mane had not forgotten the old roads between the plains, and now the she-horse galloped apparently upon the very waters of the sea as Dawn found Ilbrek and Corum, both mounted on the same steed, out of sight of any land at all. The cool ocean rolled, blue veined with white, on all sides of them, turning to pink, to gold, and back to blue again as the sun climbed the sky. Ilbrek delighted in the feel of the spray upon his face. Corum sat behind Ilbrek, clinging to the giant's great belt.
American said that Shadow Isle existed even before the coming of the Shi, yet you told me it only came to this plane when the Shi came.
There were always adepts in certain arts who could travel between the planes, as you well know, and doubtless there were Mabdon druids who visited Eunice Scythe before it properly arrived here.
And who originally were the folk who dwell now upon Eunice Scythe? Were they Mabdon?
Never. An older race, like the Vadach, who were gradually superseded by Mabdon. Living in virtual exile upon their island, they became inbred and cruel. And they had already been inbred and cruel before the island became their only home.
What was this race called?
That I do not know.
Ilbrek drew Cowan's chart from inside his armor, inspecting the parchment closely, and then leaning forward to the ear of Splendid Mane.
A little more that way, my friend, northwest.
Almost at once, the horse began to alter its direction slightly. Grey clouds began to appear, bringing with them a light rain, which was not particularly uncomfortable, and soon they had passed into the sunshine again. Corum found himself half asleep as he clung to Ilbrek's belt.
Rest, my friend. Take the opportunity to rest your body and your mind as much as possible, for you will need all your resources when we come to Eunice Scythe.
Aye.
Now it was that the two heroes rode across the sea and came at length to Eunice Scythe, a small island shaped like the peak of a mountain and shrouded by dark cloud, where all about it the sky was blue and clear. The breakers boomed on its bleak beaches, and they could see the hill at the island's very center, and soon they saw the single tall pine standing upon the top of the hill. But of the rest of the island, though they rode still closer, they could make out little.
Halt, my friend.
Corum adjusted his silvered conical helm upon his head and leaned to tighten the straps of his greaves of gilded brass, at the same time shrugging his silver burnie into a more comfortable fit upon his body. Over his shoulder went his quiver of arrows and his unstrung bow. Onto his left arm went his shield of white hide, and now he clenched a long hafted war axe in his silver hand, leaving his right hand free to clutch Ilbrek's belt or to draw his strange sword when the occasion demanded. In front of him, Ilbrek threw back his heavy cloak so that the sun glanced off his golden braided hair, his bronze armor and shield, his bracelets of gold. He turned to look back at Coram, and his green-gray eyes were identical in color to the sea. And Ilbrek smiled.
Are you ready, friend Coram?
Coram could not imitate the devil-may-care smile of the Shi. His own smile was a little grimmer as he inclined his head slightly.
Let us ride on to Eunice Scythe.